This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is On the Media. Brooke Gladstone is out this week. I'm Bob Garfield. And this is President Trump on Tuesday giving his State of the Union address.
Congress has 10 days left to pass a bill that will fund our government, protect our homeland, and secure our very dangerous southern border.
Trump and his wall. The wall, the wall, the wall. And as usual, with an assortment of misleading and blatantly false assertions. But when former Georgia gubernatorial candidate Stacey Abrams offered the Democratic response, she didn't devote much time to rebutting the barbarians at the gate nonsense. Instead, she sort of changed the subject.
We can do so much more. Take action on climate change.
Climate change? Who said anything about climate change? Certainly not Trump. But it was a telling moment because under the new Democratic House majority, a lot of issues are going to be addressed through the prism of climate change, immigration being near the top of the list. That's because severe weather, rising temperatures, and rising sea levels will trigger waves of human migration, as the president likes to say, unlike anything we've seen before. In its most recent forecast in October, the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change estimated we have only 12 years to moderate warming trends if we're to be saved the worst effects of drought, floods, and famine. But as Abrams' message foreshadowed, the focus is being turned away from impending doom to the utopian possibilities of government being unleashed to avert existential crisis. In fact, on Thursday, a group of Democrats presented a non-binding resolution to start to address the climate crisis.
Democrats are rolling out an ambitious plan to eliminate the U.S.'s carbon emissions and revamp the American economy. It's called the Green New Deal, and it's being spearheaded by Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Senator Ed Markey.
Our first step is to define the problem and define the scope of the solution. And so we're here to say that small, incremental policy solutions are not enough.
Kate Aronoff has written about climate and the Green New Deal for The Intercept. She says that in order to rapidly strip fossil fuels and carbon emissions from the global economy in the next 12 years, we have to act fast and think big.
The Green New Deal tries to take in all of that and say, you know, we have this massive problem as we did in the aftermath of the Great Depression. And we don't really know what it looks like to fix it. We didn't really know what it looked like in the late 1920s and early 1930s to build a welfare state in the United States. But we did it because we invested resources in it and said, we have the money available, we can make this possible, and we're pretty screwed if we don't.
In your Intercept piece, you describe a sort of socialist and social justice utopia, wherein the battle to restore climate equilibrium will also address many other structural problems and inequities and even right historical wrongs. Can you give me some examples of the subsidiary benefits that flow, in your view, from the Green New Deal?
Sure. If you think of something like transforming our grid system, most of those jobs are unionized and very well paid. And that creates a lot of very well paid work to make our economy low carbon and to strip fossil fuels out of it. Something else the Green New Deal could do is to provide public transportation to folks who, you know, don't have access to it. If we had, say, high-speed rail connecting every major city in the country, that's something which not only improves our quality of life, but also creates many, many jobs. So you could also imagine something like a federal job guarantee being part of the Green New Deal And that would create basically a wage floor in the country. So you would offer a job to anyone who needs one and have the government be the employer of last resort and provide an alternative to these other sort of carbon-intensive jobs that are so common throughout the economy. And so the benefits really sort of, you know, flow out from one another. At the heart of it is a real recognition that this transition can be something that improves people's quality of life.
Let's talk about the history of this nascent movement. It's gone from virtually no share of the public conversation, at least as measured by Google searches and Twitter mentions, to most definitely a thing. Where did it come from? Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, she's in the thick of it, but she is not the inventor of it.
Certainly not. So, funnily enough, the person who claims to have invented the term Green New Deal is Tom Friedman, the New York Times columnist, who in 2007 wrote a column basically calling for a rebrand of environmentalism. So to take it out of the realm of sort of hippies and tree huggers and make it this sort of macho capitalist project.
We have not only these kind of grand bargains between the environmental community and industry broadly, but that we understand that through them, we can actually propel innovation and entrepreneurship in this country.
That is not where its legacy has stayed since that time. There's a group of thinkers in the UK known as the Green New Deal Group who were the first to really do some substantial thinking about this and who Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's team have actually drawn a lot of inspiration from. And, you know, it's been in the Green Party's platform since about 2012. Jill Stein made it a prominent part of her campaign.
An emergency Green New Deal to create 25 million jobs, end unemployment, and jumpstart the green economy.
And Van Jones, a former quote-unquote job czar in the Obama administration, talked about a Green New Deal as a way to sort of shape the stimulus and the response to the Great Recession. But its real reemergence was when about 200 young people with the Sunrise Movement, this youth climate organization, occupied Nancy Pelosi's office, and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez joined them there.
We're here to demand that Nancy Pelosi and Democratic establishment leadership step up and actually create a plan to stop this crisis that is imperiling all of our generation's lives, that we actually...
All right, that's the history. Speaking of history, and as you alluded to earlier, there's plenty. It was called the New Deal, and that was the original means by which an activist government mobilized against the ongoing catastrophe of the Great Depression with public funds, public works, vast infrastructure expansion, and so on. Not because even in 1930 the public loved a socialist-style command economy, but because the alternative was economic collapse.
The members of the Congress realized that the methods of normal times had to be replaced in the emergency by measures that were suited to the serious and pressing requirements of the moment.
So I think the circumstances are parallel, even if you look at the lead up to the New Deal. So Herbert Hoover, who dealt with the very early days of the Great Depression, was consistently unable to figure out what this crisis was. He didn't know the scale of it, what had caused it, and was so committed to the idea of private businesses being able to meet the needs of the people that he really was just so opposed to the idea of federal intervention in the economy. And so one of the first programs that he unveils is this ad campaign to encourage people to invest in charities. But that doesn't work. And there just really wasn't an avenue for folks who were struggling to get their basic needs met. And so there was this sort of mass social uprising from people who were being thrown out of work, who couldn't feed their families, saying, please have the government intervene in our lives to make them better. And so that was sort of the call that FDR brought into the office and how he got into the office. And, you know, even as he was governor of New York, implemented several programs that would find their way into the New Deal later on.
Now, earlier I mentioned flipping the narrative. On the other hand, I kind of feel like Jor-El on Krypton.
And we're like, the world is going to end in 12 years if we don't address climate change. And your biggest issue...
The ticking clock is still a part of the pitch.
Yeah, and I think that is certainly a part of referencing back to the New Deal. And the other thing that people bring up often is the mobilization around World War II, which looked at a similar existential threat and devoted a massive amount of federal resources to confronting it. And, you know, I think that is absolutely the mindset we need to be in. There are climate scientists who are increasingly calling for a quote-unquote wartime footing to deal with climate change. I think the New Deal and the Great Depression and something like the moon landing, if we were to combine all of those things together, then we might start to get a sense for the scale of work that this transition will require and the sort of vast nature of it.
There is significant buy-in already from some key Democrats.
Will you fully endorse the Green New Deal tonight?
I support a Green New Deal.
Well, we have to have a Green New Deal for America. We need
a Green New Deal is creating many millions of decent-paying jobs, transforming our...
But as a society, we've been fighting over health insurance since the 1990s. So, yeah, Krypton and all that, but Republicans, does the future of Green New Deal not hinge on people who simply don't want any part of it?
Yeah, it's a good question. But I think what the Green New Deal framing does smartly, and the people pushing for it are smartly getting around, is this tendency within environmental groups to sort of go begging to Republicans to say, please support our climate policy. We'll make it as weak as possible if you just get on board. And we've seen this, you know, time and time again, most notably in 2009 with Waxman-Markey, with this cap and trade bill.
Ratifies the fact that emissions trading is a policy tool that will be employed.
Which started off as somewhat decent legislation for the time. And through the course of debating, it just got watered down so much to the point where if it had been passed, that bill would have kneecapped the environmental protection agencies in ways that Andrew Wheeler and Scott Pruitt could really only dream of. And so that has been a trap that I think a lot of environmentalists and Democrats have fallen into, is saying that, you know, we will only get climate policy if we convince enough Republicans to get on board. But as we've seen, this is such a deeply partisan issue that, you know, I don't think Republicans really come to the table in good faith to debate climate policy, particularly not given the millions of dollars that they get from the fossil fuel industry every year in campaign contributions.
I want to end by bringing this back to something I was kind of hinting at in the introduction, and that is President Trump's obsession with migration at the southern border. Now, the fact checkers have documented chapter and verse why almost everything he says about the threat is untrue. But the irony of this conversation is that if the climate is left unchecked, it'll all come true.
Some of the migration that we're already seeing from Latin America is due to folks not being able to harvest their crops because their fields are going fallow because of the effects of climate change. That's not all of it, of course, but climate is sort of a factor in why people are heading north and seeking jobs and, you know, in some cases, protection. So, you know, we will see more migration. That is just sort of a reality of the world that we're living in, no matter how quickly we mitigate climate change. But I think this gets back to something that is really powerful, I think, about the Green New Deal framing, which is that we have to learn how the state can do new things, how the state can learn new tricks to deal with a very different world. Climate change will affect every single policy field in the next century. And so, you know, immigration is a climate issue, whether Trump talks about it like that or not. And it deserves folks who are thinking about climate change to have a real response to that, which takes seriously the need to have a really humane approach to inviting folks into the country, I think.
Kate, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Kate Aronoff is a contributing writer for The Intercept. Coming up, the man who helped make Facebook what it is desperately trying to make amends. This is On the Media.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.